Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good Saturday morning to you. We hope that your weekend is off to a great start. Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the show.
We have a very special guest that will be joining us shortly. He unfortunately has come down with a sinus infection, and we feel really badly to be dragging him out of bed and having him call us and talk to us today. So that being said, make sure that you guys send him a quick shout out later on and let him know that we hope that you hope he feels better.
Yeah.
And so for today, we're talking to someone that I have a great deal of respect for, not just for his courage in speaking out about the obstacles he has had to overcome in his life, but because he works so hard to help others along the way. Matt Pappas is not just a blogger, a podcaster, an author, and an advocate. He's a survivor. We are really looking forward to talking to him today because this is a topic that we haven't yet tackled. And as you know, our show is all about awareness. So without any falderal, let's bring in our guest. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
How are you feeling?
Oh, I've been better, but I'm going to power through. I have what everybody else seems to be having these days around here, where I live at least, is some kind of crazy sinus infection, but I'll manage. No worries at all.
Okay.
Where are you calling from?
I live in central Pennsylvania, south central Pennsylvania, to be exact. So.
Okay, well, that's plenty far enough away from us, so.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll try and not spread it out your way, I promise.
We appreciate that. We've been trying really hard all winter to not get sick, so don't blow it for us.
Yeah, really, that's the last thing we need in addition to everything else we've got going on. So, but we do appreciate that you still wanted to go through the show with us. I know how hard it is to, you know, even function during a sinus infection and anything else, any other type of illness. So, like I said, we do appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure. And I know this is an important topic and you guys do a great show and I wanted to make sure that I was a part of it. So I'm stoked and honored and I will give it my absolute best shot to answer all your questions and, you know, do whatever it is you guys need me to do.
Awesome. Thank you.
We look forward to watching you dance the jig later then.
You don't ever want to see me dance, man. Like, not ever. It's not pretty. Sick or not, it's not a pretty thing.
Do you have any questions for us before we go on?
No. I think I'm about as ready to go as I can get. So, yeah, let's just jump right into it whenever you guys are ready.
Okay. All right. Awesome. We'll jump right in. To protect our listeners, I don't want to go into too much detail. I don't want our discussion to be triggering for anyone or to make anyone feel uncomfortable. However, I do want you to be able to tell your story. So is it safe to say that you experienced abuse on several levels as you were growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the main part of the abuse, I guess if you want to say the main part or what started it out, was childhood sexual abuse that happened at the hands of a neighbor kid up the street. And then that kind of that was like what started it when I was 5 to 10. And then that kind of snowballed into the narcissistic abuse from my mother when I was growing up and the bullying when I was in elementary and middle school. So it was sexual, it was verbal, it was emotional, it was all kinds of stuff. But I guess what could really have set things in motion, for lack of a better term, would have been you know, what happened to me at the hands of that teenager up the street when I was 5 to 10.
Wow.
Okay.
That's wild. Yeah. And we're both so sorry that you went through that.
Definitely. I hate that for you, and I really do. I really feel so badly that you had to go through that.
Were you able to reach out to, you know, a trusted adult to get any kind of help?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of times when somebody is abused on any level, but, you know, especially when it's something that involves like sexual abuse, you're groomed to the point where you're made to feel like you can't tell anybody, you can't trust anybody. You'll break a secret bond that you have with your abuser because you're special. And if you tell somebody, then you'll never be able to be that special person again. You are sometimes threatened to the point where, you know, they would harm you or your family or your friends or your pets if you told somebody. So there's all different types of grooming that goes on when you're in the middle of abuse. And especially when you're a child and you have no idea what's going on and somebody that you trust is doing things to you that should never be done, but they're rationalizing it and making it seem like it's a good thing. So after a while you start to almost believe it. And to that point, you know, oftentimes it's very common that people don't reach out for help because they're either afraid to, or they're ashamed to, or they're just basically groomed that what's happening is normal and that there's no need to. So to answer your question, no, I didn't reach out for anybody or tell anybody until decades later, really.
So it's kind of, just to follow up, it's almost, I don't think this is the exact same type of situation, but it's almost kind of like a Stockholm syndrome kind of thing where you kind of go along with it in a way.
Start to connect with your abuser.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it can be, and obviously Stockholm syndrome can be an absolute big part of it. It really all depends on the situation, and, you know, especially, it's a lot easier to groom a child, obviously, than an adult, because, you know, even though I was, you know, like, I left the abuser's house every time, but I kept going back because he told me I was special. He told me I was cool. This is what cool kids do. He told me I wouldn't get a ride on his motorcycle anymore, on his dirt bike, you know, his little mini bike, if I didn't keep doing this. So in my effort to fit in and to be with a cool kid, and to hang out with somebody who thought, you know, who was about 16, and here I am, you know, some little kid who's not even in, you know, 5 or 10 yet, for somebody to think that I'm super cool and I'm worth hanging out, I must have to keep doing what he's doing because that'll ensure that he won't hurt me, that I'll get to ride the motorcycle more, and that he'll keep thinking that I'm a cool kid, and someday when I'm in school, he'll be sure and tell people how cool I am. Those were some of the things that he told me, and being a little kid trying to fit in, I bought right into it. And, you know, it happens so often because kids are so easily influenced. And I mean, when you're that young, you just have no idea, you know, that something that is happening like that is really bad for you, because the people who you trust are telling you that it's good. So you're like, okay. And even though it doesn't feel right and it's scary and it's emotionally and physically painful, you keep going back because that's what you're groomed to do and that's what your mind keeps telling you.
Yeah, absolutely. Did any of the adults around you start to question why you would be spending so much time with that teenager, or was everybody just kind of, you know, I would hate to say oblivious, but do you feel anything towards the other adults around you that maybe they could have helped you manage it better?
Well, he was the son of a family friend up the street. Like, his dad worked at the local garage where my parents always took their car, so my parents knew him. His mom knew my mom, so they were family friends. And so it was pretty much like, you know, nobody ever knew anything. I mean, other than what only he knew and I knew. I never told anybody else. And so, you know, I didn't want to reach out to anybody because, you know, obviously I was groomed not to, but also, but because I was ashamed to the point where I, it's a very weird combination of being ashamed, being fearful, but also wanting to fit in. And oftentimes that desire to fit in and that over time influence of you're doing the right thing because this is what you should be doing if you want to have X, Y, and Z happen in the future, you just end up buying in hook, line, and sinker, and before you know it, you're going back every day, every week, month after month, and experiencing the same thing for what you are perceived as being told as it's right, it's normal, it's what cool kids do. So, no, no other adults knew. I never told anybody. And, you know, to this day, I mean, I don't know if his parents ever found out or not. I have no idea where he is or what he's been doing ever since the abuse ended.
Wow.
So when were you able to get help, and, you know, how long did it take for you to begin the journey of healing that you've been on, so that you could, you know, help yourself and help other people along the way?
Well, in my, I'm going to say mid, now about early 20s or so, my parents, out of the blue, decided that they wanted to send me to a therapist against my wishes, and I didn't want to go, and I thought it was pointless because I had basically just suppressed these feelings after it was over to the point where I just tried to pretend they didn't exist, nothing ever happened. It is what it is. Right. I'm just going to move on and forget about it. So they sent me to this therapist. The therapist ended up over time talking with me. And, you know, it came out that I was sexually abused as a child and I had been bullied in school and all of this stuff. And so that was the first time that I had ever told like anybody ever. But what happened was after some of those visits, the therapist ended up breaking the confidence and telling my parents what happened. And then my parents, yeah, so she broke the confidence. She broke, I mean, technically the law, I mean, if you want to get technical, but she ended up telling my parents what happened. I had no idea that she told them. My parents confronted me. I, like, completely lost it emotionally. I'm like, no, it didn't happen. No, it wasn't true. Leave me alone. I'm fine. It was fine. And, like, I tried to rationalize how good it was again 15 years later. That I was okay and that nothing mattered. Yeah. So at that point then, I totally, really, really emotionally shut down, like absolutely, totally. I never spoke of it again. I didn't tell anybody. Like, I completely alienated myself from my parents. It was pretty much almost like being re-traumatized all over again because now people knew that I didn't trust telling in the first place. Now they knew. Now they ended up telling people in the church, people in my family, people, friends. Oh my God, Matt was sexually abused. I'm getting calls and notes and letters from people saying I'm praying for you. I'm like, what are you talking about? And here I come to find out that my parents had told all these people. And, you know, whether or not their intentions were pure, which, you know, doesn't matter. The point is, you know, they told people when they weren't supposed to, because the therapist told somebody when she wasn't supposed to, and it started this chain reaction of total distrust throughout my entire life that lasted for a really long time. So after that, I spent the next couple of decades after that, after those events, really just not really trusting anybody, just trying to live my life, just trying to pretend it didn't happen. I'm fine. It happened a long time ago. It doesn't affect me. And I pretty much suppressed it all over again for the next 20-some years after that happened. So for about 30 years, I, you know, save for that short time of being re-traumatized, I never spoke of it that I can recall.
Wow. So what finally kind of turned you around and got you to where, you know, I need to confront this and try and make peace, or, you know, seek some kind of healing out of it?
Well, basically, after my second divorce in 2013, I decided that I needed to seek some help, not for this, but for because my life was kind of crashing down around me. I'm in my early 40s, and now I'm a single dad again. and I have to pick up the pieces of my life and keep going. So I sought the help of a therapist, mostly just to help me kind of get my head back on straight, as I like to say, to kind of get some perspective in my life, get some new direction, and kind of get my sea legs again to move forward after I had been divorced for a second time. So I found a therapist through work, and I started seeing her. And after about 6 months of working through various relationship questions and life questions and just like general counseling, it came out in a session in the summer of 2014 that I had been sexually abused as a child, and I had been, you know, the victim of narcissistic abuse and bullying. And like randomly, honestly, it came out of nowhere. Like, it wasn't a conversation topic. It wasn't a workbook topic. It was just, I had this memory and this is what it was. And then we started diving into that for the whole next year. It was childhood sexual abuse, memories, you know, invalidation at home, why I felt this way, what happened, why, you know, what these feelings meant. And I started to really put two and two together as to why my life had been spent so far feeling the way that I did, why I had trust issues, why I had problems connecting with people, why I had codependency problems in relationships. All these things were finally starting to click as to what was going on. So, you know, the therapist who was amazing at the time, you know, really worked with me and kind of helped me understand that for the first time that I was a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And when the first time that I realized that I was a survivor, like everything just kind of came into focus, and I really started to like dive head first, you know, jumping with both feet into healing. I started reading books, watching videos, I started journaling. And then in early 2016, I started my blog, survivingmypast.net, to kind of step up my game a little bit from just the regular journaling, you know, for personal gain, you know, or I'm sorry, for like personal help, personal reasons.
Right.
I started taking it to another level because I wanted to start helping other people, because I figured that there had to be other people who were like I was. And obviously there are. I mean, there's 7
right.
billion people in this world. And, you know, I mean, just, you know, boys and girls are sexually abused to this day all the time. And it's sad. And as adults, we live with it, and we live with the shame and with the heartache and the frustration and the confusion of why it happened. So I wanted to do my part to help inspire people and realize that you're not completely broken. You aren't doomed to a life of solitude and despair and loneliness because something happened to you when you were a child that wasn't your fault. And so, you know, what I guess really kind of keeps me going is the fact that I want to keep healing. I want to inspire others. And that, you know, this isn't a problem that happened once or twice and then it has gone away. I mean, one right. in four girls and one in six boys are sexually abused before their 18th birthday. I mean, that's like startling, scary stuff. And it's happening today. And so I need to do what I can to help myself continue to heal, but to help inspire others to be aware, to realize that they're worth healing if they were abused, to help others and just really raise awareness and take it to the highest level that I possibly can, because I don't want anybody else to ever have to go through what I did and feel the way that I did, feeling so alone and ashamed.
Well, we're grateful to you for coming out and trying to help others. Pardon me. I beg your pardon. We that's what this show is founded on, is, you know, the belief that we're here to help others. And through our struggles, we can do that. So we're grateful to you to come out, you know, and speak about these things so that other people know that, I think everybody experiences things differently. And, you know, perhaps they know on some level that they're not alone, but maybe hearing your story kind of clicks with them and they realize that it's time for them to get help. So, you know, like I said, we're really grateful for you to come out and talk about this with us. So, having said that, we are going to take a very quick break. And during that break, we will be listening to a song by Annie Baltic called All By Myself.
La, 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 la. Hey, it's a lazy day, wanna stay in bed and laugh at all the clips on YouTube. Eat popcorn and pack, yeah, covers on my head, yeah, FaceTime until I fall asleep. This week
back to Voices for Change 2.0.
Hey there.
I'm Rebecca Lombardo, and
I'm Joe, and that was Annie Baltic with her song All By Myself. Thank you, Annie.
Absolutely. And on our guest today, rather, is Matt Pappas. He is an author, a blogger, a podcaster, and an advocate. And he really is at the forefront of assisting survivors of child sexual abuse as well as bullying, and we're really glad to have him on the show today. Matt, we'll jump right back into the questions if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely. Go for it.
Cool. So since you came out and started telling your story, has it been a positive experience for you? Have you seen or heard from other survivors like yourself saying, you know, hey, thank you for coming forward, you know, that type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started talking about it in blog form and going online and interacting with other survivors in survivor chats and whatnot, it was scary. I mean, I'll admit, you know, when you go out and put yourself out there and say, hey, I was a victim of childhood sexual abuse, and, you know, there's a gigantic stigma around mental health in general, but, you know, people just don't want to talk about what happened to them 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. They'd rather just leave it buried in the past and pretend it didn't exist. But when you really start to deep dive into, as I like to say, into your past and understand that so much of the way that you are is affected by what happened to you, that understanding helps you be able to be kinder to yourself, to validate yourself, and then to be able to work through the feelings that you have. And that's what I found other people have been able to relate to the most, is that feeling of not being alone. I get comments on my blog, people who want to be on my podcast, people who leave me, DMs on Twitter and whatnot, just saying thank you for writing your story. Thank you for sharing. Thank you as a guy speaking out, especially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you know, for better or for worse, it's often easier, and I say easier delicately, for a woman to speak out than it is for a guy. And it's never easy. I mean, it just isn't. It's scary. But guys have this pride, this man card, this self-perceived, you know, I have to be tough, whatever type of mindset, that we don't want to admit that something terrible happened to us and then reach out and ask for help, because we don't want to be ashamed or ridiculed. We don't want people at the office to know. We don't want family members to know, or friends, or the church, or whoever. So we oftentimes just keep our mouth shut for a variety of reasons. But when you start to really share your story and you see that there are just millions of people around the world who have been through similar circumstance and feeling the same way that you are feeling for any particular reason, it's really empowering, because the biggest problem, or I guess the worst feeling, is that feeling of being alone. Like, you know, I've been abused, I'm broken, I'm damaged. Nobody's going to want to be my friend if I tell them what happened, so I better keep it silent. But when you open up and you see other people who get inspired by you opening up, and then you inspire them to open up, and then they inspire other people, that's how you really start to, take this whole awareness thing to a whole new level, to where you're not just talking about it, but you're doing something about it by engaging with others and encouraging them to do something, and then they encourage somebody else to do something, whether it's seeking help so they can heal themselves, where they can reach out to others, where they maybe write a book, write a song, do some artwork, anything that, any good that can come from something so horrible is only going to be there. I mean, you know, is really just something amazing that can really take off and inspire so many. I mean, nobody ever wishes this past. I mean, you just don't. Like, I don't wish what happened to me or my worst enemy ever. But it happened, and then, you know, I practice radical acceptance, and the fact that it happened, I can't change it. But I can move forward and have the life I want, because I deserve that, and I can help other people have the life that they want, because they don't have to feel ashamed because it wasn't their fault, they didn't ask for it, all these different things that you work through. So yeah, it's been a hugely positive impact for me in so many ways, from others that have reached out to me, and just by validating myself and writing it out. Because, you know, when you write something out and you get people responding back with encouragement, it goes a long way.
Yeah, it helps it reinforces that, you know, you're doing good, you're being selfless and putting yourself out there, and it really does. It shows people, hey, I'm not alone. You know, we've seen that with Beck with her book, and, you know, people approaching her, hey, your story really resonated with me, and so, yeah, and to have it be your message that's coming out, and, you know, we've talked about the child sexual abuse, obviously, but, you know, you also mentioned the narcissistic abuse and the bullying. You know, that's tough, you know, and to really stop and take stock of your own life, and then to see someone like you come out and talk about it and go, well, wow, yeah, I went through that too, you know, and, you know, just helping people realize, you know, it's an amazing thing, you know.
And to piggyback what you were saying about men and their ability to speak out, I know I've even recently spoken to someone, a gentleman who has felt left out of the discussion with, you know, something like eating disorders, you know, that he really felt as if, you know, he was sort of pushed to the side because it's a woman's issue. And there are certain things that, yes, we can sit down and we can call it a woman's issue when it relates specifically to a woman's body or things like that. But it's important to remember that men go through these things too. Men get depressed. Men have bipolar disorder. Men consider suicide. Men are abused. They can be sexually harassed at work. I mean, it's really important that we, you know, as much as we have been fighting for the awareness for women's issues, we need to bring the men's issues to the forefront as well. And I know that you use many different methods to help survivors of abuse. And I wanted to mention really quickly that you do also write a column for It's the Good Men Project, correct?
Yeah. That's a website I write for weekly, as you said, and it's not just a mental health website. It's a website where men and women write about issues that affect, you know, men, but also their families and their work and their careers. And it's really just a place for men to reach out and to raise awareness for topics that they believe in, to share what's on their heart, and for, you know, to really engage not just men, obviously, but women too, because it's men standing up and having the conversation that nobody wants to have about whatever the particular topic may be. So my, mm-hmm. you know, the column that I write for is, you know, it's basically sometimes it's original work that I put out. Sometimes it's a post that's been on my blog before, but I use that to help reach an audience of just, you know, millions of people every month that go to that website to inspire men and their families to really just, you know, be aware of the stigma that's around mental health and to try and erase that by doing our own individual part. So, yeah, I do write for – it's an honor to write for them. I was also in a video with them that was put out, about a month ago for their mental health social interest group, which a bunch of us got together for about 6 weeks on a conference call once per week, and we decided to do a video PSA to about men who were speaking out because they suffer from depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, because they were abused. They have, you know, all these different types of things that men oftentimes don't ever talk about because it's not the manly thing to do. You know, we came up with a hashtag called Not Weak, Just Human, and we made a video PSA, and we all wrote articles about it. And I was honored to be a part of that because I spoke out that, hey, I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, bullying, and narcissistic abuse, but I spoke out and got help, and I'm not ashamed. And that's what you know, the Good Men Project tries to do. That's what I try and do. It's inspire men and women, everybody, to just realize that it's not a guy or a gal issue. It's just a human issue. It's a people issue.
Right.
When, you know, it really is. I mean, you know, like you guys said, sexual abuse, depression, suicidal thoughts, you know, all these different types of self-esteem problems, body image issues, eating disorders. Like, this affects guys as much as it does, and, you know, women. It's just that guys don't ever talk about it. We don't speak up about it. We don't report it. You know.
We're not allowed to feel.
That's exactly right. You are exactly right. Guys are not supposed to feel. We're just supposed to be the strong people, the breadwinners, the take care of everybody else. Don't let on that you're hurt, you know, because you don't want to, you know, for any number of reasons. So, Yeah, absolutely. I try to do my part as much as possible, and writing for GMP is a big part of that.
That's awesome. I need to look into that.
Yeah, definitely. And let me just say one more time, for any gentlemen out there that are listening that feel as if they may not have a voice, please do visit the Good Men Project on Twitter, or find their website and kind of take a look around there, because I think you'll find a more acceptance than what you have been experiencing before. So, Matt, can you tell us a little bit about your personal website and what people will find when they visit?
Sure. Yeah, the website, of course, is survivingmypast.net, started in early 2016. It started out as basically a blog, just a place for me to write down my thoughts, in addition to, you know, writing in just like a personal diary or journal. So that website has grown into a blog, podcast, videos on YouTube, Periscope videos. It's really kind of just blossomed into something that I was really hoping it would be, but wasn't necessarily anticipating that it would be, a place where I can, a place where I can share my thoughts, be open and honest, write about issues that I want to raise awareness about, feelings, thoughts, things that I've been through. I use it as a platform for others to be guest bloggers. So I've got a bunch of people who write for me on a regular basis, or just one-time people, you know, who they'll share their story and that's it. And it can be anything about their personal story or a mental health topic that they are passionate about. I have people who are on my podcast as guest hosts, sometimes therapists or advocates or coaches or other survivors like me who want to share their story and kind of come out from the shadows, so to speak. So it's a website that really is just, it's my story, but it's also so many other people's stories, and it's there to help everybody have a voice who maybe otherwise wouldn't be able to for some particular reason. So, it's an honor for me to share the stories of others. It's an honor for me to share my story and to really help raise awareness as much as possible. So pretty much you'll find videos, blog posts, and podcasts there every week that I put up or that guest bloggers put up.
That's very cool.
That's awesome. I think we are going to take one more quick break. We will be right back with Matt Pappas, and hang on there with us.
Join us next week.
Don't miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Now, thank you for joining us. We're back with Voices for Change 2.0. We are just having a comedy of errors in the recording booth here today with Joe and myself. So we just wanted to send an apology to our guests, an apology to our listeners. We had a really late night last night, and we're not completely
firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, exactly. We're
I know the feeling. Trust me.
We're having a little bit of trouble here, so forgive us, please. We don't want to do a disservice to our guests, so we're just going to keep on going with the questions and make sure that his message is heard. So, Joe, you have a question?
I do. And actually, Beck and I were kind of talking about this last night and thought, maybe we would ask you about this and get your outlook on it. How do you feel, Matt, about the use of the word victim Do you think we've come to a place where it needs to be removed from the discussion, or is it still necessary to use this term in these type of situations? And where I'm coming from with it is, you know, people will be talking with them and they'll say, I'm not a victim. Don't call me a victim. You know, I just, what's your two cents on it? How do you feel about this?
Well, it's an interesting topic because a victim implies that you are helpless and that you have no control over your situation, when in essence, that's exactly what happened. You know,
right.
If you are a survivor of abuse, and I speak from the abuse perspective because that's what I know the best. That's what I have my experience in, I guess, for lack of a better term. But, I mean,
right.
The fact is that, especially as a child, I mean, you absolutely 100% were a victim. I mean, you had no say in it. You were groomed. You were led to believe. You were just going along with somebody that you thought was trustworthy. So you absolutely were a victim at some point in time for any length of time, whether it was a one-time event, whether it happened twice, 10 times, over years and years, you were absolutely a victim. So, but I think what happens, though, over time is if you stay in the victim mentality for too long, that's when you stay stuck and you can't heal. And, I mean, I'm here to absolutely validate everyone who's been through something like I have been through, because you were absolutely a victim. You were, you know, you were traumatized in a way that nobody should ever be traumatized. So it was not your fault. And, you know, you can never, ever, ever blame a child, you know, for not being able to fight off or to rationalize, you know, why something shouldn't be happening when you, you know, barely have no idea what life is about in the first place. So,
right.
You know, over time, though, as you start to reach out for healing, you start to kind of realize that, yes, I was a victim, but, you know, this event, that event happened. Now, what can I do to move forward so I'm not stuck in a life of despair and loneliness and sadness and feel like I'm not worthy and, you know, nothing I do is going to amount to anything? So you kind of go from victim to surviving to thriving to conquer, which is where I came up with the survive, thrive, conquer thing. Is,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what it kind of was born out of was you were a victim of something. You survived it, you know, into adulthood. And as you start to heal, you begin to realize that you were a victim and you were surviving. Now you're going to try and thrive, which means that you're going to use the tools that you've been learning through therapy, through books, through videos, through journaling, whatever it is that you're doing to help yourself, artwork, music, crafts, whatever. You're using that empowered feeling, those tools that you're getting to really help yourself not feel as stuck and to realize that you're worthy of, you know, the life that, you know, everybody else has that you want, that you're worthy to be able to have a good career, to have a family, to have a spouse, to have friends, to be able to go out and
right.
do things and not let your abuse rule your life and keep you stuck all the time. So, you know, it's very hard to go from one step to the next. And honestly, when you do, you oftentimes will bounce back and forth between surviving and thriving and surviving because you're
right.
really, you know, I mean, every day is a struggle. And some days you feel like you're on top of the world and nothing can go wrong and you feel great. And then other days you just feel like the world's crashing in on you and you're a victim again and everything stinks and somebody invalidated you at work or a family or, you know, something caused you to be triggered. And so, you know, it's really a constant battle, and some days are easier than others, and some days are a lot harder than others. But it really is the fact that you were a victim, but the key to healing is to not stay in that victim mindset and really realize that you are worth healing and having a life that you have always dreamed of.
Absolutely. And you know, the reason that I came up with that question was, like Joe said, that we've heard that, you know, folks have said, you know, don't call me a victim. And you know, we're certainly not saying that they're not allowed to say that. You know, there's been instances where, you know, I've been told that recently now in the conversation when it comes to suicide, the word commit needs to be removed from the conversation because that makes it sound like some sort of a crime. You know, you commit a crime, you don't commit suicide. So now we say they died by suicide or they attempted suicide or what have you. So I think we're all learning as things progress, what is right and what is wrong in each of these situations. And I just wanted to make sure that people know that, you know, I personally, if someone experienced child sexual abuse, if I say that they were a victim of abuse, I don't look at them as a victim now. I look at their life back then as a child. Yes, they were a victim, like you said. Now they're a survivor. But I just want people to know that, you know, there are those of us out there that understand the difference between being a victim and being a survivor, and that you can be both, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. And it's really realizing, honestly, how much you feel you are worth healing. And so oftentimes when you're an abuse survivor of any type of abuse, whether it's domestic or emotional or sexual or whatever the type of abuse was, you feel like you aren't worth healing. And until we kind of overcome that to the point where we realize that we are important, that our story is important, that getting out and getting help is important, until we get to that point, we do often stay stuck and feel like a victim. But once you take that very first step, everyone just gets the slightest bit easier to keep moving forward. But that first step is absolutely the hardest one.
Yeah.
And the most
right.
important one.
Yeah, definitely. Now, in addition to your regular podcast, which, as you said, is on survivingmypast.net, they can find the information there. You have a very interesting way that you spend your Sunday mornings. Could you briefly discuss that with us?
Yeah. About a month ago, as of the time that we are, you know, having this show here, I started doing a Sunday morning Periscope series, which is on Twitter. Basically, it's like Facebook Live, but only it's for Twitter. So I basically just go live via my phone, and I read through a book called You Won, Anxiety Zero. It's by my friend, who is a psychotherapist, and also, you know, as I said, my friend Jody Amon. She wrote this book to help help everybody who reads it understand what anxiety is, what it makes you feel like, why you feel the way you do, and ways that you can really combat anxiety and really kind of kick it to the side and not let it rule your life, because anxiety affects 40 million people in just the U.S. alone yeah. every year. I mean, it's a huge, huge thing, and it affects everybody in different ways, but the tips and the tricks that anxiety uses to trip us up and make us feel stuck are universal. So what I do is I had already read through the book once, and so I'm reading it through now on Periscope every Sunday morning for about, you know, 40 minutes or so. We read through as much as we can get through, and we just interact and chat live through video on Periscope. So, yeah, it's really healing, because when you read a book to yourself, I mean, it's great. But when you read it out loud and you start getting interactions with other people and you start getting their point of view and then validations of, yeah, I feel this way, I know what you mean, I think this means that, I think that means this, and you start to really get all these perspectives, it really just brings every paragraph, every chapter, it brings it to a whole new level of understanding when you're interacting with others as you're reading through a book. So it's really been an amazing experience so far as we go through it, and I'm excited to see what happens. You know, as of right now, there's about 200 people that join me every Sunday morning,
wow.
you know, throughout – You know, either live or to watch a replay, you know, later on in the day, to really just enjoy the read through, to share, to spread the word, to help heal together. So I'm hoping it continues to take off, not for me personally, but because anxiety is such a big part of my life and something that I struggle with. it's another way for me to continue my healing journey and really help inspire others that, you know, I'm a regular guy who has a day job, taking care of his family, trying to find my way in life. But, you know, I'm taking every opportunity possible to really just help as many as possible, because that's what I feel like my calling really is, you know, beyond just my 9-to-5 day job, is to really take my healing journey to as many levels as I possibly can and help as many people as possible, because to me, that's really what it's all about.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's awesome that you're putting yourself out there like that, Matt.
We just have a couple of minutes left, but we really wanted to get this question in for you. This is an important question.
Yeah, could you possibly share with our listeners what some of the warning signs are that someone is being abused?
Yeah, I mean, that's some of the things that I know I did, things you want to look out for, obviously, are a complete, if your child, and I'll speak to this as a, you know, from a child perspective, things like being withdrawn, no longer interacting with friends, wanting to stay in their room, not wanting to talk anymore, having less of an appetite, feeling ashamed, all these types of things that maybe your child or your friend or some other family member never did before, but now all of a sudden they start to exhibit these behaviors. I mean, those are absolute red flag warning signs to just try and talk to that person and get them help in some way, because it's not something you want to ignore. I mean, obviously there are physical signs as well. If it's a domestic abuse or a physical abuse thing where, blatant signs like, physical wounds or scars or whatever, but the
bruising
emotional effects, right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, those are more easily, recognizable, so to speak. But the change in habits is really what you want to look out for, because I can remember my parents and family saying, Matt was always this happy-go-lucky kid. He loved everybody, had a good time, played with his toys, played with his friends, and then suddenly something changed, but then nobody ever really acted upon it. Nobody ever really did anything. And,
right.
You know, when you start to see things happen in your child or your family member's life or whoever it is that just don't seem to add up, there's usually a reason behind it. And, that's when you really want to try and take steps to be there for them, to understand them, to not push them and not try and make them talk until they're ready, but let them know that you're here to listen and really just, as I said, some of those really warning signs are just when something is out of the ordinary from the way that they used to be, that's oftentimes a red flag to at least be aware and try to stay on top of, the change and find out what the reason is for it. So those are things that I know I did specifically, and looking back, and I've seen it in some other people as well that I've talked to with their family members and their kids who have experienced this.
Cool.
Well,
we
appreciate your insight. You know, I think that's super important that people are always on the lookout for any of those
behavioral changes.
You know, spending time with someone that they ordinarily didn't spend time with, like in your case, they were a family friend, but perhaps somebody should have questioned how much time you were spending with them. So I think that's all
really
important.
You're exactly right, because it's one thing, for a 15 and a 16 year old to hang out, but when you got a 16 year old hanging out with a 5 year old, looking back, I didn't think anything of it, but I mean, that's a red flag that I know now to look out for. So it's really just being aware and being involved in your child's life as much as possible, so you can be in tune when something does come up, if unfortunately it does, that you're aware of it and that you're there to help as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Matt, we really appreciate you. We thank you so much for coming on the air with us today, especially not feeling well, and we're really grateful. So thank you for coming out and telling us your story and possibly saving some lives out there. You just never know who you're going to touch when you do these type of situations. So, again, we're grateful to you, and we are going to play out with a song by Blake MacIver. It's called Start to Believe. And again, thank you, Matt. And if there's anything that we can do to help you in the future, get your message out there and make sure you touch base with us.
I absolutely will. Thanks, guys. It was an honor to be on your show. And, you know, if we can reach even one person with just the message of hope, then that's really just an amazing thing. So thank you again. I'm honored to be here. And I look forward to having you guys on my show at some point soon, too.
Oh, we would love to do that.
We'd be honored.
And stay on the line with us for just a couple of minutes, okay?
I sure will.
Awesome. Thanks. And you can find Matt at survivingmypast.net.
Staring down that long and winding road, I felt like I could never start again. Flipping through the pages of my broken life, just remembering when. Before I was yours, I just stumbled through my feeble lies. But now you bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. And baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Looking up that mountain top, I said, how do we begin to climb? Wishing I could speed right through to all the joy, just manipulate time. But now I am yours, so I'll stop wandering through those feeble lies. Cause now you bring me all I could ask for. All that I need, and baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Yeah.
I guess I'll start to believe.
And though my doubts close in, I know there, I won't despair. My dream come true. Who knew? Baby, it's you. And though I falter, I lose control. Your soul pulls me through. Baby, it's you. You know just what to do. You bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. And baby, you gather the pieces. I guess I'll start to believe.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.